Thanks for listening to the Second Funniest Podcast. You can reach us at 408-228-4911 or send us an email to podcast@justincomedy.com. Please, once a month, vote for us at Podcast Alley. Also, check out our store at cafepress.com/justincomedy. All this information is available at secondfunniestpodcast.com. Got some dates for you. I'm going to be at the Omaha Funny Bone January 27th through 31st. I'm going to be in Los Alamitos at the Gate on February 2nd at 9 o'clock. I'm going to be at the Sacramento Punchline March 11th through 14th. The Laugh Out Loud Comedy Club in San Antonio, Texas, March 17th through 21st. I'm going to be co-headlining at Wits End in Westminster, that's in Denver, near Denver, Colorado, July 14th through 18th. I'm going to be coming back to Rooster Teeth Feathers, July 22nd through 25th.
How many children would come and tell you when they lost their virginity?
That's true. Oh, my gosh.
Can they hear the fact that I'm blushing?
Touch the Muppet Baby.
May the force be with you.
Because when I die, it's going to piss me off.
Oh, picturing my two-year-old, the freedom to get all red-faced in the middle of the living room and just launch some ass candy into his diaper.
I never want to eat candy again.
Shut your face!
It's like, just like, why are you such an ass?
But it, deep down, I'm like, I'm always surprised that people listen.
And now look at us. We're doing an iPod in the dining room.
Oh, so
sane. Boom. Yeah.
Christmas came
check
a little late
out.
This year. That
check
was well
it
done.
Out, right?
That's good. But no ukulele remix.
No, I'm not that good.
That'd have been
I'm
that'd
not
been
that
impressive.
Good.
Well, that makes us the second funniest podcast. Justin Worsham, star of the second funniest podcast.
Thank you,
podcast.
Kevin Miller, co-star of the second
who
funniest
who do we have
podcast.
As a guest star?
We have the fantastic, been waiting over a year, probably.
Yeah.
We talked about this probably episode two, maybe three.
Maybe one.
We're like, we'll get this guy in anytime. Yeah. And then I would call him, and I would say, hey,
Darren
you want to do the
Carter,
podcast?
Will you join us on
No,
he was on the podcast.
He was.
Couple
twice.
Times. Twice.
Twice.
Yeah. Twice.
So I said, hey, you want to be on the podcast? He's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. And then I'd be like, how about this day? Oh, no, not that day. No, that's not good. Yeah. How about this day? Well, I'll just let you know. I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing. And then finally, he's here now.
What?
Right here.
Now?
Right now.
Oh, there he is.
The one and only Heath Heitch.
Yeah.
At last. At last.
You know what's funny? I don't think he's going to talk.
No, he will. He will.
Do the bit. As long as I could. Yes. No. Maybe.
Do you hear that sound? There's some white noise. Do you hear it?
I hate you both. So while we were doing our little sound check pre-show, I was turned off the recorder. For those of you who haven't heard me explain this already, I listen to the recording. That's what I listen to on my headphones. The guest and Kevin come from the board, the headphone feed that comes out of the board.
Yeah.
So they hear, so I make sure that we're always what is being heard by the listeners, what's being heard by me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Whenever I hit stop on that recorder, I don't hear anything. And so I guess that Heath was doing a bit where he's going. And
that's pretty good.
I hit stop, and so I wasn't hearing it, but Kevin was hearing it. Kevin knew what was going on. He's like, there's some kind of white noise. I'm like, what? I was erasing the sound check file, and then I had to hit record again, and then I hear it, and I start futzing with the connections and everything. Meanwhile, Heath is turning blue in the face because he's trying to hold it for as long
as
he can.
As
do it again. I want to take my earphones off and hear why he didn't hear it. You should have been able to hear that.
I had my headphones on. I got cool Sony studio quality headphones. I can't hear what's going on.
So how come you can hear your wife when she screams?
I can't. I usually can't. You know how I know when Natalie talks is you look. That's the only way that I know that she's chiming in because you'll just look like you're checking in with the living room.
And all of our spines curl up when we hear her voice.
See, he gets it. He knows. I hate you. She's behind me.
She's outside.
Kevin just looked down into the living room trying to throw me. What is this? He comes in here and now you guys are screwing with me the whole time?
I don't. I'm new here. This is all new. So this is the second funniest podcast.
Yes.
We have our own intro. We have an online store. Something happened in 2010.
Wow.
Who went pro?
I'll tell you what happened with that intro.
Yeah. Someone was bored.
Exactly. I was in San Antonio, Texas at the River Center Comedy Club where there was a comedy. Heath has explained this to me. Heath has an actual clause in his contract that when a comedy club wants to book him, he says, well, I'll only stay in a hotel. I've never stayed in a comedy condo. And I remember him telling me about this. He's like, no.
What is a comedy condo?
The club will buy an apartment or a condominium and then you stay there. But here's the thing. It sounds like, how is that different from a hotel?
Yeah.
Well, the way that it's different is that imagine 2 to 3 dudes living in a space for 5 days and then leaving, okay? Yeah. They're with the intellect.
Comedians.
They're comedians. They're like the intellect of a frat guy.
Yeah.
Right. Where they have no consequence on the place that they're staying. There's none whatsoever.
Sounds like college in smaller, bite-sized, more dangerous forms.
Well, and the real issue is that, so these guys, they go out and they stay there for 5 days. Mm-hmm. And then they leave. And then the club pays somebody, usually, I'm assuming, like a bar back.
A waitress.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They give them an extra set of dough. They go down there. There's no manager, I'm sure. I mean, maybe at the good ones. At the good ones, there is. But the level of clubs that Justin is playing at, there isn't somebody who goes down there and goes, let's just do a once-over to make sure everything's going okay.
Yeah.
The first one that I walked into was quite possibly the worst living domicile I've ever seen in my entire life.
Like, bad news.
There was stucco, like the texturing on the drywall in the shower was peeling away from the shower. The pots and pans were just filthy. The bed, I'm like, I don't even want to have a black light anywhere near this. I'm just going to have to, the closest thing I've ever come to meditation was falling asleep in this condo this week.
Yeah.
And it was it's funny that you're here today because I went into this thing and as soon as I walked into the features condo, I was like, this is why Heath says no comedy.
Now, some do have nice places that I've stayed. You
like
with
Comedy Works,
Comedy Works was great.
How do they convince you that theirs is nice?
They say, we know what they normally look like, and this one's different.
Okay.
You say, we understand. Sometimes you have to know the people. I don't believe him until I walk in, he's like, this is a nice place. You feel like work.
It might as well be like a 5-star hotel, that condo.
Yeah. Sure.
Comedy Works.
It's like renting a cabin or something.
Yeah. And if for any comics who are listening to this, we're talking about the Comedy Works that's at the Landmark because there's two in Denver now. So the new one has a
and the other one too.
Condo.
I've been to both. It's really nice. Too? And there's one in Cleveland that's pretty good. But it's funny because I was in that one and I came in a day early and I'm in there asleep like it's 2 a.m. and then all of a sudden I'm dead out. You know, I've been traveling all day and I hear on the door and I jump up like, oh my gosh, and the door is being jarred open like it sounds like by a football player and I'm really freaking out and I get up and I don't know what to do and I go to the kitchenette, you know, and grab a butter knife and I'm like, you know what I'm going to do, and I go to the door and luckily I put the deadbolt on. And there's a guy trying to break the deadbolt.
Oh my gosh.
In the thing. And I go, hey, what's going on? And he said, who are you? And I said, I'm Heath. Who are you? And he said, I'm Dan, the security man, which kind of made me laugh because it sounds like, you know, Dan, the security man. And he was trying to get in and he said, you're supposed to be here? I said, yeah. He goes, who gave you the keys to this place? And he was coming in to get me. He was like, I'm going to get.
Oh, he had heard somebody was in there, lights were on, people were moving, and you're there a day earlier.
I was there a day early, and he was like, I'm going to find out if you're supposed to be here. I go find out, but I'm real tough because I've got this, you know,
dead butter knife and the door between
a brass chain holding me on, like, you know, pot metal chain holding the door shut. And he goes, I'm coming back if you're not supposed to be here. And I'm like, well, come back. I mean, don't come back. Get out of here. You know? And I was real tough.
I'm a man. Yeah. I've got a gun.
Yeah. And a butter knife.
And a kitchenette.
Yeah. So there's everything that can happen. Wow. And then some say, no, we have one connected to the club. And that's when you go, ooh. Because I did one in Macon, Georgia. And he said, no,
I was just there for a wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
So this place is, you know, it's a nice club. It's Whiskey River. Nice club. Really built up nice. And he says, the owner says, no, we have a hotel on the back of the club. And I went, what? What do you mean a hotel? No, we actually have a hotel there. And so I go there, and he has taken the blueprints like he found in the trash of a 1979 Holiday Inn and built rooms that are cinder block rooms with the unit on the front. And there are 6 units on the back of the comedy club that open to the outdoor.
Right.
And 5 of them he has Hispanic day laborers that he just lets live there for free that clean his club.
Oh.
So it's a very weird, you know, you're like, hey, I'm the new guy. And they're like, hey, so sí que, you know, it's that kind of stuff. You know, you guys can be cooking fish all day out here. You know, like, it's just really weird. So, yeah, there's.
And did you say it that one?
I actually left, and that night I had somebody that lived in town that came and picked me up. I said, I'll come get you.
He has the gall to say that it's a hotel. We have a hotel.
Well, blueprint wise, it is.
Right.
You know, and he like, you know, when you see on the freeway hotel liquidation furniture?
Right, right.
That's where all the furniture came from. You could tell. Like, I was like, oh, that's what we're doing. And it was weird. It was like a prison. It was like a prison.
Oh, man.
We did that same thing. I think I've talked about this before on the show last year, that we had this thing where we stayed at it was the same little like motel thing behind a Mexican food place that I was doing with Senor Carter.
Totally different.
And and the people that work there told us that it used to be a whorehouse back in the day.
Wow.
And then what they did was they would let the kitchen staff live there for free, and then it kind of became like a meth place because they were renting them out. But
a whorehouse turned into a meth place? That seems highly unlikely.
I don't understand.
But I think they were like following Donald Trump's like real estate plan, like developing
in reverse, right?
And then so we stay there, and here, that was my closest like experience. This is why I thought staying in a comedy condo would be so exciting, because when I got there, it had no shower head in the shower.
No.
And I was
stole that day one.
Exactly. You know,
sweet shower head.
Yeah. And Darren had the room right next to me, and I remember standing in like as far as I could from the wall that shared our rooms. Yeah. And he did some kind of like he cleared his throat, and I could hear it like he was standing in the room with me. And I was like, oh, this is gonna be awesome.
Oh no.
And he
then you pulled the curtain, and he was standing there. Wait a minute, I thought I had a window.
I thought this was the shower.
And I remember being so excited to take a shower in this, like, with no shower head, and like, it's just because it wasn't disgustingly filthy, but they
salt of the earth, it was real and urban,
yes, it was. But and the bed, like, if you breathe, like, just breathing in your sleep, made it go, and then the best part was at about 3 a.m. or maybe closer to 4, just before sunrise. 8,000 crows decided to hang out in the trees, and the walls are so thin, they're just like they just had a family reunion. Oh, it was awful. It was horrid. But so this place, I go there, the TV's there, and I'm like, well, I'll turn on the TV and I'll just start unpacking and everything. Mm. I hit the TV, it goes static, and it's picking up one Spanish TV station in static. Like, you can't. And so I hit the channel button, and it's on channel 34, and it just goes, like, it changes, but then it comes right back to 34, because 34 is the only channel it was programmed to pick up. So I figure out how to scan for channels, and it goes through all of them, and it comes like, 34.
Go ahead.
Go, no, and so then I go, well, okay, maybe I'll have internet here, but I'm sure I don't.
What?
There's no way.
Oh, I wonder if you didn't have a TV because of the change to digital, and they didn't have the digital receiver.
You're half right. Mm. I didn't have television because the comedy club decided they didn't want to pay for cable in the condos.
All the way across the board.
And maybe I could have had television before it went digital and they didn't have a new receiver.
Twice the reasons.
I found out there's no internet, and so I'm like, so I just start, I put in a Curb Your Enthusiasm DVD that I had from Netflix, and I'm ironing my clothes, and then I see underneath what is supposed to be used in like a kitchen island, it's like a tile. That's what they have the TV on. I see underneath a cable hookup.
Ooh,
like there's a coax cable that's just coming in from the wall. I'm like, oh, it's just not plugged in. I'm like, it couldn't be this easy.
Yeah.
It couldn't turn it in. And now I don't even get the Spanish channel.
They go, oh, shut them down. You like that?
I did. I felt like I was being experimented on. Yeah. Like, because I was just like, this is what happens when they take all of my resources away. Like,
you didn't see the big glass window mirror on the other side of the room? And when you turned off the lights, they scrambled and turned off theirs.
What an interesting experiment that tried to tell you every effort you make, you receive less awards. Yeah. Oh, you want to try to solve that problem? Well, we're going to take that away from
you. They
want
to see how fast I'll learn to stop trying.
Right, exactly.
Stop trying to improve and just settle in, or it's just going to keep getting worse.
You just keep getting deeper in the mud.
This one's very experimental. Shock him. No, I was in one time, and I'm about to go, you know, you're laying down, you do the TV thing, and I see there's a DVD player, and it's flashing, like the disc thing. And I was like, oh, wow, someone left their DVD, and I hit it and it opens up and it's a porn DVD. Yeah. And I started cracking up. I'm like, okay, like this. I go to the club. I'm getting ready. Same kind of thing. I go to the club and I go, they go, how's the condo? This is what they asked me. I go, fine. They go, did you find the porn? I was like, oh really? It's there for,
Did you find the porn?
I was planning on a waitress. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Wait a second. No, he's not.
Never kid.
So I decided, like, well, I got to get out of here. I ironed my clothes. Oh, no, and this is the other thing, too. I didn't find. So then I went to the club because I was going to go see a movie, and there's a movie theater right across from the club. The club was in, like, a mall. So they said, we'll get you free tickets to a movie. And I was like, how about some cable? Let's start there. Yeah. Then maybe talk to AMC about hooking us up with some cable. But anyway, so then they go, here's the thing. What room are you staying in? And I was like, the feature room. And they go, okay, so there's not two bedrooms? I'm like, there's not a bedroom. It's a room. It was a studio apartment. And I said, and then the guy goes, oh, okay, well, the headliner's going to get a hotel. So if you want... you can stay in the headliner's room, which is a little bit bigger. It's a little bit nicer. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then he goes, I just figured we could do that. And so you don't trash two rooms. I mean, how bad have you trashed the place already? Oh. I was taken aback because I always assume that people, I guess, are more like me. That I was like, what the hell does he think I would have done in 30 minutes? And
trash
I was like,
the room.
Yeah, I go, I literally haven't touched anything. Like, I didn't even go to the bathroom in there. That's what I said to this man that I just met. I said, I haven't even used the restroom.
Yeah. In the Jimmy Page suite. You know that, right?
Wow. That is shocking that he just expects the bar would be set there.
Yeah. And so then I said, no, I haven't touched anything. He goes, oh, okay. Oh, then, yeah, great. So then I move up to the other room, which is bigger. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment. It has a DVD combo TV thing.
Right.
So, but still no... this one doesn't even get the Spanish station in this room.
Because the cable's
You shorted it out the whole building.
Evidently, I shut it down.
No static Hispanic channel for any of us. Yes. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
And then this is the kicker. So I go up and I look for Wi-Fi. Evidently, the city of San Antonio provides a public access Wi-Fi network that you could pay for like $5 for a day, right? Well, you don't get it in these rooms. Somehow they've engineered these condos that you don't get it in these rooms at all. So I was like, son of a bitch. So I'd have to go down to the club every day and use the internet and just hang out there. And I watch football in there because they would open up the club during the day. And I'd just sit at the bar, check my email, and then I'd watch playoff football. But other than that, it was a great experience through the club. I mean, I don't really care if the people hear this and they think I'm shitting on their club. Because, I mean, shooting straight with you, the pay is not worth it.
But it forced you to create this intro.
Exactly.
Isn't that how it started? And now you're like, unless they have a week open, I'm free in March.
Going back in March to the other club in San Antonio where they have a hotel at that one. So that's
Hotel, they mean four holes dug in the ground.
Oh, I didn't think about what that. I didn't think that there's a different language.
Hotel.
That's hotel. That's better than a condo.
That's what you get.
I'd stay at a brothel above that room anytime. It should be used as a brothel. Yeah. It's only meant for 1 hour at a time, that bed.
Oh, man.
No more. You don't sleep in that. You do not sleep in that.
Dust mites alone will come and get you. Now, how did you two boys meet? In a comedy condo?
Yeah,
when eHarmony first started introducing same-sex pairings...
Do they do that now?
I don't know.
I thought that was their whole thing. They didn't do that.
Really? I didn't know that. How did you know that? And I don't know.
Wow.
I'm a single guy, and you've been married since before the birth of the internet.
But how do you know you could set up with guys, though?
No,
can't. This is awkward.
You can't, is what I'm saying. I know that it's not for same-sex marriages. I also lived with a guy that was looking for a same-sex marriage.
Good call.
And he talked about how he was in the 125.
You were living with a guy that...
Wait a second.
Most people call that? Just hook... Yeah, okay. No,
it was only 8 years.
Was it common law then? Yeah, that's common law.
California has no common law.
Did Prop 8 rule that out then? You can't be married to him?
I plead the fifth.
did you ever pants him when he was doing the dishes?
Wait, I'm sorry. When he was doing the what? Hey-o! Anyway,
so we met at Pepper Belly's, which is a club up in Fairfield,
every time you
California.
Say that, I think it's like a puppy farm.
Yeah, right.
It's where you go and adopt Snoopy.
You might do that under the stage. I don't know. Knowing Jimmy, that just might be how he rolls. But anyway, we met there. It was really funny. I don't know if I've ever even told you this story. I went out and I was working a week there, and I tried for months. Like, I went and auditioned for them on their off, like, Thursday night, and the guy who said, I go, I'm trying to get MC work here. The owners weren't even there the day that I auditioned, even though that's the day they told me to come. There's a great comic, really nice guy by the name of Sean Peabody, who was running it. And he's like, dude, you're a feature. You don't need to MC. You're a feature. I'm like, no, no, you don't understand. I've got 15 minutes. Like, he's like, you don't let bookers.
And I tell the same joke three times.
Yeah, in that 15. It's 5, 5, 5, and that's the joke that I'm doing 5, 5, and then I end it with, did I mention I have a short-term memory problem? Thank you. My name is Justin Warshaw.
Actually, that's not bad. Yeah, I know.
Do you have a patent on that? Do you have that written down?
You can have it. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I go down there. He's like, you're a feature. Don't let bookers tell you what you are. You decide what you are because they're going to keep you, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I can't. I can't, you know. So I call, I keep following up, and it took me 5 months of following up to where she finally said, I can give you a week in August for this much, I was thinking it was like $300, but no hotel, and I said, that's okay, I have family in Modesto, I'll just commute in, so they're like, great. So I had met Darren already at this point, but I didn't know Heath, and so I remember looking at the website going to see who I was working with or whatever, and it said Heath, I couldn't pronounce his last name.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I go, Heath Hitchcock. I've never heard of him. And then Darren goes, Darren says to me, he goes, who are you working with? I go, I don't know, some Heath Hick or Hitch. I think it's Hitch because of the Y. Like, and he goes, yeah, it is. It's Heath Hitch. I know that guy. He's like, oh, you're going to love that guy. He's a great guy. You're going to love him. I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, it was so stupid and arrogant, but I was like, I don't know. I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah. Right? I didn't bother using the World Wide Web to inform myself about his comedy stylings.
And so I go out there. I get there the same day I think that he does. When he comes in the door, like, he was super nice, obviously, you know, so I feel like I'm telling
the story.
I feel like I'm telling the story.
Like at my wedding.
Yeah, like we end up getting married.
Justin. Yeah.
So anyway, we start talking, and then I find out that he's into NASCAR, like, early on or whatever, and I'm like, I'm into NASCAR, and he's like, you know, so then we just hit it off. He's, like, I think, within 15 minutes of arriving the club, he pops open his laptop and was looking for, like, Star Wars action figures on eBay.
Yeah, just like, I was actually bidding on something at the time.
Nice.
That's so funny. Yeah.
And so I was like, Star Wars 2? Like,
yeah, he's a nerd and a NASCAR fan?
There's only like four of us.
Yes. I think I'm in love with this guy. Like, it was that, to me, it was honestly like, at that point I was like, I want to hang out with this guy as much as possible, but I'm staying in Modesto. And so it's like, I would go, if you want to get, I must look super creepy because I was like, I don't know what you're doing tomorrow, but I mean, if you want to hang out, you want to get lunch or.
He can't see what he's doing right now, but he can't find a place to rest his left arm.
I was trying to do the hitting on resting arm thing.
But it made it even more creepy because you couldn't figure out where you wanted to put your arm. You were going, like, to lean on the wall, the chair. I'm uncomfortable.
I didn't know whose jacket that was, and then I realized it was yours, and then I could touch it.
I'm uncomfortable, and I can even see you do it.
he was like, yeah, man, I'll give you a call or whatever, right? And at that time, I was staying at my dad, who was living in his duplex that he owns. And they were out of town. Mm-hmm. So I was by myself in this duplex playing Harry Potter, I think, in the Sorcerer's Stone.
Wow.
On my Xbox.
Like it.
So I would drive all the way home.
GameFly? Why did you even have that game in your possession?
I don't remember why I bought it. There was some reason. I think it was cheap and used or something. Anyway, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was pretty boring, but it wasn't that bad. So I'm playing
Did you play it all the way through?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I finished it that week that I was with him because it's made for 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I keep coming back and
took
forth.
Took you a week?
Yeah. And we would have lunch or dinner or something. And then, so after the first night, that was back when I was doing the bit about Natalie sounding like a sand person from Star Wars, right?
Oh, classic.
And I remember doing that bit and seeing and hearing him laugh from the back of the room. And then I came off stage like, dude, that sand person bit's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I knew the Star Wars thing and everything. Yeah. So, but he can quote scenes from Star Wars. Like, he could just
do it, go.
No.
Oh, no, I can't do that.
I can't.
Okay. I've given up on the whole story. Like, I'm so done with it now. I love it. I love
the
old stuff. Yeah, I got really burned. There's too much stuff now. I like the vintage stuff. I like the vintage. That's what I was looking for when we met. I was looking for these vintage 1977
figures.
Well,
the new ones, there's something missing when you watch a Star Wars movie and it doesn't have Darth Vader.
Or a story. Stories. No.
Nice.
I don't know.
Have you ever sat down and watched like the first three and then put in Phantom Menace right afterwards? You feel like somehow you've turned on an ABC Disney movie?
No, here's how big of a Star Wars nerd I was. Yeah, well, I know what you're saying, but yeah. when the first trailer was released for Episode 1.
Oh, no, did you?
I went to The Siege, which was the Bruce Willis movie, because they attached it, and they were like, there was a line around the block for the movie. It was very funny. Everyone went in. We all were seated. It was all these 30-something men, and the trailer comes on, and the trailer was brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you remember that. Oh, you saw this stuff. You had no idea what it was. And then they roll that trailer. Everyone cheers, gets up, goes out. Six people stay for the movie out of like 400 ticket sales.
Awesome.
True story at the Westwood. And I call them. I just saw the trailer. And I remember I was working on a show at the time. And a friend of mine knew someone at Fox, and I got to go to the screening, the press screening for episode one.
Oh.
And so everybody was like, oh, my gosh. And so I saw it early, and I remember thinking, what was it like? And I said, well, and they were like, oh, you know, to hear me say that, to be such a nerd growing up and loving it so much, to be kind of punched in the face, if you will. But at the time, I didn't want to accept it. I'm like, no.
I appreciate you taking us back to that time. Oh, yeah. Over 10 years ago, when there was a time when The Phantom Menace was going to be good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
No, I liked it.
Okay.
It was fine, but it did not do anything that they promised they were going to do.
Right.
We spent 20 years going, what is the Clone Wars? And,
and
it was barely, it was a TV show.
And then they made a romantic comedy set in another planet.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. there's a total movie missing in that trilogy about Darth Vader going off and killing the other. I'm like, where's that film?
Yeah, I know.
We were supposed to see that.
Right.
You robbed me of my childhood.
For me, when I had that thing, my dad would always take me when we would go to the movie theater. So when episode one came out, I was working at Red Lobster, and they rented the theater for us. And I said, is there any way that what it was is that they said that you could get
when episode one came out, you were still working at
Red Lobster.
That was 1999.
Yeah.
So you were working at PGA, Great America. And
I was. Yes. And because we hadn't moved out to the Bay Area yet.
Got it.
So we were living in Stockton, and I would they said, we're going to rent the theater. You can get tickets for like a loved one or a date if you want to bring them. And I said, I go, okay. And I got two tickets. And it was, everybody had, like, because they were all older. They either had their wives or their girlfriends or whatever. Yeah. And it was me and my dad.
Because
I would take my dad to whatever the earliest showing was, because he would take me. So all of the first three episodes of the movie. Ethan's providing a soundtrack.
Keep talking.
So we would go and we'd see it, and I just remember waiting in line. So for me, it was the nostalgia of being able to like say, "Oh, now I'm grown up.
Yeah,
I'm a big kid. I could pay for my father to join me and go see the Star Wars movies."
Yes. Yes.
So we went all three of them when they came out. It was either in Modesto or Stockton. I would take my dad, and we would go see it. And I just remember, like, when the Phantom Menace one came out, and then Obi-Wan and who's the guy that was the Qui-Gon or something?
Yeah,
wasn't
Qui-Gon
it?
Jinn.
Yeah. So I just remember it was early on in the movie when he buried that lightsaber to that big wall.
Right.
It was like, oh, me and my dad both go, oh.
Exactly. Yeah. That was it. That was the moment I went, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's exactly what I've always wanted to see happen.
Yes.
Right.
And then it just kind of went somewhere.
Yes. And then the pod racing started.
Yeah.
Yeah, it became less and less about Jedi's and all of that cool stuff, and more about
as we say, cool
kid.
Stuff. Yeah. It's less about Jedi's and more about relationships. What kind of movie was
it? It was about racing.
Yeah,
it was about racing.
It was about power. Who has the fastest pod racer? So funny. And then Sepulveda, he's trying to wreck Anakin, throwing wrenches in the works, you know, like that.
I don't want to.
And
that
why
movie.
Doesn't C-3PO remember that Anakin built him, you know, like that? Years later, will they have a memory wipe? Well, he knows everybody. Like, we're just going to so,
that was the, you know, what's funny is that was huge for me, too, when I was like, really? Why? Like, I remember watching it going, why does Anakin need to build C-3PO at all?
Yeah.
Like, why does that even need to happen? Is it because they need to establish how robots are made? And
we know how robots are made.
Yeah.
Droids? Sorry, guys.
My bad.
Robots.
Droids.
Do you remember, you know, these aren't the robots you're looking for. You remember that big scene?
The robots?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
We don't serve their kind here.
Yeah.
Robots.
You're robots. They're going to have to wait outside. Cut. Line. George Lucas is like, who is this Joker?
Get off my stage. Get out of here.
We booked him, George, because he's from Modesto.
Yeah.
We thought you would have a kinship or a
hair.
No, I hate him. Get him rid of him.
I burned that town to the ground.
Yeah.
the end.
Yeah. Now, Star Trek.
Yeah. Do you like the new Star Trek movie?
I do. Yeah. I did like it. Yeah.
Do you like the Star Trek up until this new movie?
No, I was always felt like I was cheating on Star Wars with Star Trek.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I did.
I wonder what
Because
that movie Fanboys, they talk about
it. Did you see it?
Yeah.
I just saw it on the ship, a little of it. I couldn't get through the whole thing.
It wasn't amazing. There was a lot of hype to it. And it was like the first three episodes of the Star Wars films where it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Hold on.
I should be crying. Yeah. Like, your intent is to make me cry, not to make me go, So I watched it, and there's this Fanboys. It's a story about these guys who are going to go steal. It's set back in like when.
Yeah, when the episode one was coming out.
Episode one was coming out. Oh, that's right. When the Phantom Menace was coming out. And these guys are going to drive to Skywalker Ranch, and they're going to steal the tape, the film of it, to be the first ones to see it.
No. They're giving it to their friend who's dying, right?
Isn't that right. Yeah, that's right.
That's great.
Yeah, because he's got to see it, and he's going to miss it.
Right. So then,
there's all this cool stuff. Like, he's got a van. One of the guys has... He always dresses like Han Solo with, like, a leather vest. Yeah. And he has a van.
And there's some great lines in there. There's some really funny fanboy stuff. But
And I didn't realize it, but the guy who plays... unless I'm mistaken, the guy who plays the Han... No, it's not. I'm thinking of somebody else in the movie was... never mind. I was going to say, I thought the guy who plays Han Solo, like that guy, is Judah Friedlander, but it's not. No. It's somebody else. But Judah Friedlander plays another
what's
character.
What's-his-face is in Seth it, like, Rogen. Four times.
Yeah.
He has, like, four
different characters.
Which kind of throws it for you, because you go...
It takes
you out of it a little bit. Oh, it's another Austin Powers sketch now.
Yeah. Because he plays a Star Trek fan, and I never understood that whole, like, animosity or whatever that between the two.
Yeah.
But
that's
I guess there is always
It's not an animosity. For me, I made a choice pretty young to be on the Star Trek side, even though later I remember being a real little kid and making Star Wars, my own Star Wars toys out of, like, Slurpee cups and things. But somewhere back there,
Slurpee cups, eh?
We were poor, thank you.
Yes. Sounds like it. Well, you were eating Slurpees. You weren't too poor.
I thought you're on the
digging
ground.
Those out of the 7-Eleven trash.
Just in the
Father, are you taking me by 7-Eleven? I heard there's a new Slurpee machine. Can't afford that. Son, can I go through the trash at least? I need a new trash compactor for my pennies that I've painted like Han Solo.
Turn off all the trash compactors at the detention level. But I seriously don't think I saw Star Wars as at the age where I could retain it until they re-released them in the theaters. In
97. Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember watching that for an understanding. We had them on VHS when I was real little, and I didn't get what was going on.
Yeah, my dad pirated all of them, and I would play them on a constant loop on VHS.
Yeah.
Like, it would be, here comes A New Hope, here comes Empire Strikes Back, here comes
Return of the
Jedi.
But I do remember, Mark, because I watched both the Ewok movies, which I did not know were straight to TV. I thought they were, because everything we watched were always on
VHS. I don't think
VHS.
I saw those at all.
I have them all. They're great. But then Mark Hamill, on when they released Captain EO at Epcot Center, he was in an interview, said that this is the next Star Wars film. So for the longest time in my youth, I thought that there were three Star Wars movies, two Ewok movies, and Captain EO. I'm like, there's six movies.
That's great. I love that.
That was pretty
now,
good.
I don't know if this is the right time, but I do. This did just hit me is that because we were talking about Star Wars and everything, and in my opinion, I didn't realize this until we were both at the Atlanta Punchline, but he has done some of the craziest stuff, like. Crazy in that what you would not expect a guy who just talked about his love for Star Wars and a guy who would look for action figures on eBay. You know what I mean? Like,
what?
Because he told all these stories, like when you were talking about that you worked on the Dude Ranch and stuff like that with Chris. Like, he went out. It wasn't even a Dude Ranch. You went to an actual cattle ranch.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't for the... Unless I misunderstood. It wasn't like... Because now there's a thing, and maybe there was then.
It wasn't City Slickers. Yeah. It was real. Like, you didn't give him a couple of bucks and get to do a cattle...
Pretend to be a cowboy. He was working with other guys that did it full time, but him and his buddy decided we're just going to do it for a couple summers or something.
I did it for one, and I was working on a show where I was riding every morning. I had this obsession with riding horses and cowboying up every morning before rehearsal, and I would gallop, ride.
Awesome.
It was cool. I had the cowboy hat and the chaps. I mean, I was like really, I looked cool, but of course, when the guy would saddle the horse, it was very funny. Like, he was a guy from Mexico named Javier. He's a great guy, and I used to pull my hat down and kind of do a spit and say, I go, Señor. ¿Cuál es el camino a México? And he goes, south, senor, south. I go, adios. Yeah, you know, I got it right off. Which he, I felt like I was Clint Eastwood, you know.
It's nice.
And so I would pretend I was riding to Mexico. So anyway, I came in full gear every day, and I was actually rent or leasing a horse at the time, which could actually do. I didn't know that because I've always had this thing like I wanted to be a cowboy, I guess. And the AD said, you really like to ride that much, like cowboy and ride? And I said, I sure do. And he said, you should go work with my sister. Oh, wow. And I said, oh, what does she do? He goes, we have a family cattle ranch, and you can go be a ranch hand. And I said, well, how much is that? He goes, no, they're not going to pay you. You just go. I mean, you don't have to pay them. It would be payment to them to go and work. And so
you don't really get a check. You just get room and board.
They put you in there where their son has gone to college or whatever, and you get his room. And it's like five families in the meeting area of New Mexico, and each one of them has a branding that that sometime in that summer,
but
August.
You had to be a competent enough rider.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know. Like, his sister took his word and said, this guy can ride. So I went out there and she said, I want to see how you can ride. And then, you know, I didn't know. We saddle up. And the first day I got there, it was very funny. John was this huge cowboy guy with like just exactly what you want him to be, like big beard. He's like 6'2", big 10-gallon black cowboy hat, you know, and he's always got chaw in his mouth.
Nice.
And the first day I'm there, it's so quiet out there in New Mexico in their little ranch house. And he knocks on my door and I jump up and I check my watch. It's 4:00. He said, let's go. And I was like, really? You know, like, okay. And we go out. You can't even see the horse barn. I'm walking through, you know, with your hands out. And he's just walking. You know, he's seen everything. And I'm stepping like high, like a ballerina, like I'm going to fall in a snake hole or something. And we get there. And I actually say, it was kind of funny. I said, he goes, here's your horse. I said, did you saddle him? And he said, like that. I went, oh, it's that kind of thing, is it? And I, in the darkness, nothing. Wow. I saddled the horse. And we rode out and rode for like 12 and a half hours a day.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And that first day, I felt so horrible. Like, I had done it. You're dirty. Yeah. You've eaten, you know, come back to the house and eaten these great big burritos. It was great. And I came back at the end of the day. It was like, you know, 5:30. Someone coming home for dinner. His wife's cooking. And I stand there and I'm so tired and I take the saddle off my horse and right when I do, I don't think about holding the reins. I'm so tired. Oh, yeah. And the horse just runs off.
Oh no.
And he goes, and he's already got his unsaddled, this big cowboy. And I go, I'm so sorry. And he goes, it's all right. He gets on his horse and just rides off after this horse. He's just unsaddled his horse.
And
he's had a day. Like, and he just rides off. And I'm standing there. Yeah, I'm standing there on the side of the barn with a saddle in my hand, like, what do I do now? You know, and then, you know, and keep the dinner warm. And then he comes back with the horse and, you know, he's all sweaty.
How long did it take him? Like a half hour?
It was like, you know, it wasn't that far. It was probably like 15, 20 minutes. You know, he finally got it. And it was 15, 20 minutes he could be with his feet up watching Westerns, which he did. It was funny. Like, he would go in, he would eat. Get in an easy boy, a lazy boy chair, you know, lean back, feet up, cowboy boots off, and watch Westerns. Like,
wow.
This is the greatest guy in the world.
His favorite thing
in the life
was to watch people pretend to be him.
Yeah, yeah, and no, exactly. That's it. That's it. And so I got the nickname Hollywood, you know, which I was like, okay. And you feel like, are they making fun of me? But these guys really they're like, you're really trying. We appreciate that. You're not there to do this kind of dude operation, you know.
Yeah,
and
then,
and I did that for 10, 11 days, did like 5, 6 brandings. And you would have to go to their house, you know, and they would go, all right, we're going to ride 6 miles that way and pick up our cattle and push them back 4 miles to the thing. And, you know, you're doing that and you're branding calves, and it's amazing. It's a really, like, every time you do something, you hear in your head, like a rock. You hear that when you're doing stuff. I'm out on the range like a rock.
You think the guy who watches Westerns is hearing that same theme song?
No. He's thinking, hi, diddly-dee, a pirate's life for me, or whatever like that.
Exactly.
No, but he was great. And they would, those boys, I mean, you can tell they have, that we were castrating, you know, like, some of the calves. And literally what happens is you lasso them, you drag them back to the branding iron, you throw them down, and it takes about 30 seconds, and it's like a cowboy gang rape. Man. It's like they throw the cows down, they cut their horns, you know, they dig out the horns, they turn them over, they brand them, they castrate them, and then they let them back up, and it takes about 32 seconds, and you hear the calf coming as you lasso it, and it's going, ooh, 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 and then it all goes down, and you hear, ooh, 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 and then it and goes back, calves are like looking, and they go back to their calves that are standing there, and all the calves are looking at him like, what did they do to you? What did they do to you? And they go, And the calf is, you can tell, almost reading his face, stay away from the ropes. That's what it is. And it, what ropes? Around the neck it goes. Charlie, where are you going? And that's what it was. And so these two little boys are doing it with us, and they're playing around. And this is the second year I go back with my best friend Chris, and we're out there doing it, and we're having a blast. Right. And they're loving it now because two guys are really into it. So we're doing it, and these two young guys, they're like 9, and they're doing it too. And they take the testicles, and they just throw them in a bucket or something. So one of the kids picks up a testicle and flicks it with his finger at the other kid, and it hits him in the like in the corner of the mouth, like in the cheek. And the kid laughs and takes it and throws it back at him, and they go about their playing. And we stand there. We're standing side by side
you
each other. Yeah, and we're looking at this. We see this unfold. And he said, dude, he just hit him in the face with a ball. And he said, he goes, they'll never remember that. And he said, but if you ever did that to me, I would never let you forget it every day. Dude, you owe me a taco. Why? You hit me in the face with a ball. You're right. That was a bad deal. So that's the way they live. They have no memory of that. Like, it'll never come up.
Man.
Like, one of the kids, we went to their house, and this is the kind of guys, I go, where did you get this pot? And it was like this ancient Mexican Indian pot that was like put together with all the paint on it, and it was glued together. And they're like, you know, all their kids have the coolest names, Garth and, you know, Hunter and Trader and Scout. And he's like, and the guy, the Cowboys is living there, he goes, Scout put that together. I go, what do you mean? He was riding and saw pottery that had been there for 1,000 years or whatever, and it was shattered on the ground, and he went out there with a paintbrush and became an archaeologist and got glue, and it must have been worth, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You know, that he found.
And he was able
to restore it. Because he has nothing to do. You talk about the hotels. They don't have cable at all, you know. They have
or GarageBand, evidently.
Yeah. Their satellite looks like a Tony Hawk half pipe. That's how big, you know. It's like you could,
just to watch Westerns that are outside the door. That's like being a cop and then going home and watching Cops.
Yeah, I know. And we would say, like he said, oh, man. We go, what, John? He goes, the wind blew all my hay bales down on the south field. And Chris and I are like, we'll do it. And he goes, what? We get to stack hay? And he goes, yep. And so we'd ride out there and be stacking hay, you know, throwing hay bales up on this thing. And then he's like, they wanted to stack my hay. Like, he can't believe it. And we came back, and there was one calf, it was kind of funny, that had lost its mother. And so you had to take it like a bottle with a, you know, those things. You've seen them on TV. Jack Hanna has those giant bottles. And we're out there, you know, with our feeding it, and we're videoing it because we're city slickers, you know. And John, the big cowboy, has taken us out there. My buddy Chris is doing this with this big bottle, and the little calf. And he says, it was so funny. He says, hey, John, does this calf do that with anything you stick in his mouth? Without a beat, John goes, hell, I don't know. We got a video camera. Let's find out.
Wow.
Yeah, they're like, whoa. All right, check, please. You know, enough of the good old boys out in the wilderness. You know?
And then the 9-year-old starts hucking balls at you.
Ball storm. Hit the deck, boys. I mean, we'd go out. I mean, it was like that. He said, I got to go. The creek, you know, is all filled with brush. It's all dead and down there. We got to go start fires and burn it out. We'll do it. You know, like that. Really? And so he comes back, and he's got a bunch of beer cans. We go, what are you doing? And he's filling beer cans up with gasoline. He's going, making bombs. He's throwing them in the brush. But we're like, this is the greatest day of our life. You know, like everything we've ever been told is don't play with fire.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Don't play with wires. Don't light gasoline and don't have
don't
any.
Don't play with cow testicles.
Yeah, yeah, no, everything. Exactly.
Everything.
Exactly. I didn't have that as a rule at my house.
Really? No,
weirdly enough.
My mom crocheted onto a pillow. Used to hang in the bathroom.
That's the best part about hearing these stories about him and Chris is that these guys, they're in their 30s at the
time. Yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
They're in their early 30s, and everything is like they're 12.
It's 12. Yeah, yeah. We're 12.
It reminds me of the movie Big. That they're
exactly.
Just, that's why they think. It's not that they're, because even me, like at this age, I'm like, if I had to go out and stack hay, I would probably be like,
No, we loved it.
But if you had the vigor and like playfulness of a 12-year-old in your head and the.
I get to play with giant Legos. Made out of hay.
And I don't think that either you or Chris, because this is the other part that just makes it funny in my head, is that you're going out and you're doing all these things with these crazy, like, pieces of masculinity. Like,
oh, yeah, totally.
Intense. And so you guys come back. They, you know, they're drinking beer so they can
drink
to make bombs.
Yes.
And then you guys are like, you guys got any Dr. Pepper?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, it was that crazy. It was that just kind of weird, different. They don't care. They don't need anything. You know, they're cowboys. They were complete cowboys. And one of the greatest greatest moments of my life were on that ranch. I was by myself. I was with the Tracy and her husband John, and we're riding and we're pushing cattle, like, you know, it's like a movie.
Right.
And this bull kind of gets kind of ornery, I guess, and takes off running. And so you have the horses hold the cattle because it's like a stampede, and they tell me, they go, "Heath, bring back that bull." And the bull is just gone. Oh, no. And I hear in my head, bum, 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 and I go, "Yeah!" You know, and I'm just whomping and stomping, you know, over after this bull. And I just, all you hear is the hoofs of the horse, and the horse going, and you're like, this is the coolest moment of my life. You know,
wow.
and the
you've had like eight of those.
Yeah. Dun, 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 and we
he hasn't even told the story about the best one.
Yeah.
You have to tell the story about you and Chris screwing around in the hills near Burbank.
Yeah.
I'm not bugging you.
We were riding.
See,
we would ride.
A comedy. Which story do you want to tell?
These are just funny, stupid stories. We were in the hills of Burbank, and we were, before we went to the ranch, or maybe it was after we worked on the ranch. So we were still riding. You know, every week, every time we could, we'd go ride, and they would give you a nag. You know, you rent a nag for $20 and bring it back in an hour. Don't kill it.
What's a nag?
just a horse that's like, I'm so done with this. Yeah. You know, and so. We would ride up on the hills in Burbank and, you know, ride back down. And we got up there, and they always say, don't get off the horses. Mm. Don't get off the horses. And we go, okay, we won't get off the horses. We're getting off the horses. Yeah. So, because we're cowboys. You know, we know what we're doing. And so
we get up to chuck bombs into fire brushes.
We've played with cowballs. We have played with gasoline.
You know who you're talking to? Yeah. I'm Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm Hollywood. Perhaps you haven't heard of me. Hollywood, Heath Heitch. Yeah. So we ride up on this mountain, and it was three of us. Scott was our other friend, and we tie off the horses on a bench that's up there. You can get a drink. You know, we're like, yeah, we're overlooking the scenery of Hollywood with our gloves and our cowboy hats on.
Dr. Pepper.
Chris is hanging from a branch. He falls a little bit, kicks the bench. The horses freak out. One of the horses pulls the rein tight, breaks the reins, breaks the second horse's reins, and they are gone.
Oh, no.
Like, we're on the top of the mountain, like a good hour and a half hike back down, and the horses go. We have one horse left. And I go, oh, no, and I try to get the guys. I go, get behind him, stop him, you know, something. Nothing happens. The horses take off up the hill and are gone, and I immediately just jump on the third horse and untie it, and Chris said to me, he goes, what are you doing? And I swear I say this. I go, I'm getting our horses back. Yeah! Like that. And I take off. You know, I slap the reins on either side of the horse, and I'm gone with a cowboy hat and everything. And Chris
what
screams.
What song did you hear in your head?
No, but Chris says to me, that's the coolest thing you've ever done. I just ride down. And I chase down. It was like the Lone Ranger. You know, I chase down these horses, and I reach up, and I grab one of the reins, and I pull two to a stop. Like, other one's still away. And I'm like, whoa. And my buddies come chasing me down the hill. Was so awesome. You know, you were so cool. Like that. And we get on it, and about an hour and a half it takes to catch this horse because you don't have a rope. He's no reins.
Yeah.
One guy on foot, two guy on horse. Catch the horse, tie him down, you know, get the thing back on. Wow. We're dirty, we're sweaty, we ride back down the hill. And Chris, when we got on the horses, it was dusk in Hollywood, you know, we're all dirty and sweat in our eyes. And Chris screams, we are cowboys! You know, it's a true story. And that's how we got back.
That's awesome.
And of course, we get back. Where have you guys been? Well, we got off the horses. They're like, you know.
That'll be another $20. Thank you.
To add to the visual aspect, because I think some people will recognize him as... his buddy Chris is Chris Moynihan.
Yeah, Chris Moynihan,
who you might remember from the movie For Your Consideration, which is one of those like best in show, like Christopher Guest movies. He plays the guy, I don't know his character's name, but he's in the young
sailor
outfit. Yeah.
He was in Mighty Wind. He was the guitar player they never let take off the costume in the Christopher Guest movies. And he's been in Coupling. He was one of those guys at Coupling. He's been on a couple, like, some really good shows.
Very funny.
You should get him to do this. He'd love it. Yeah, it'd be fun. Fun story guy. Yeah.
He'd tell all the same stories.
Yeah,
we've already heard all the cowboys.
Well, I just thought of it would be great if he has like an entirely different perspective.
Yeah,
he always thinks it's so cool. Like, he almost fell off the horse when he jumped off it. I try and help him feel better.
He kept making us do chores. I was hanging out watching westerns. He's like, we want to go pitch some hay. I'm like, dude,
what are you doing?
I mean, just
he's got a cinnamon roll and a grape pico. You know, I'm fine here.
There are westerns right here.
Well, isn't there? I'm sorry, I'll stop.
No, please.
But this is also this one time that you guys were, this is the best, you guys were messing around, like, doing stuff, like, acting out scenes.
Oh, yeah, we acted, you mean on the mountain?
Yeah,
we would do that up in Burbank. We'd ride the horses up and then say, all right. And like Chris would say,
nice.
You know, we're in our 30s. I mean, literally, he'd go, tell me to go check a bluff. And I would go, check that bluff. And he'd jump off the horse and run up and check the bluff and come back and jump on the saddle. You know, we're just being
and they're so, not taping.
We're not taping. We're just
ad-libbing.
Like when you guys would go to an improv club and doing it. Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, we're a baker and the police come in for a free donut. You know, we're like, all right, we're
that's
on the.
That's an awesome yeah. scene.
I know. I've seen it on your reel.
So, but, no, KevinMillerImprov.org. Yeah, see, it started out as these are like awesome cowboy stories about how cool you are.
And we're playing.
You've slid back in. It's just Star Wars.
We're playing.
But instead of Dubaks, you're on real horses.
We're playing this. Yeah. And it's so dumb. And we
that's awesome.
One time we would take rope up there, like a lasso, and he said, hey, I'll tell you what, I'll climb down this embank and you throw the rope to me. We've always wanted to do this. Tie it around your saddle horn and back your horse up and drag me up like I'm injured. I'm like, why are we still talking about it? You know? So he climbs down the hill. I throw the rope. I tie it on my saddle. I start backing the horse up, you know, back up like this. And he starts dragging up the hill and he's faking like he's struggling. We get to the hill and in my peripheral, as I'm backing up, it's an entire like 4-member Asian family who have been hiking and stopped like, oh, there's a problem.
Oh,
and I'm dragging my buddy up and he's on his belly and he sees him and there's that awkward, hi, you know, we're fine. Is he okay? Yeah, he's fine. We were just pretending like we were, you know, we were pretending like we were Tommy Lee Jones and, you know,
yeah,
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
It's hard to
lie.
It's hard to pull these things off when you have to shave every day.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Like,
it's different if you, like, they would probably, if you were literally 18 years younger, they would have just ridden on by and not thought twice about it.
Yeah, and we're sitting there like, we should go. I have a Florida Natural commercial audition at 2 o'clock. <Yeah. laughs> I got to go see my science.
Yeah. And we can't, there's, I just think it's such a funny dynamic between the two of you that, because there's also things like that. They used to make like desktop wallpaper for each other. Like they would make these artistic things, but it was all just
adventures.
To screw with each other.
Yeah, it was adventures we'd been on, so it looked like it was something.
And it's hysterical to me.
Yeah, you have to see them. That's a visual thing. Maybe we'll put them up on Kevin.org, whatever
improv
it is.
Org.
KevinImprov.org.
Yeah.
The I don't know.
I just walked in and put the baby in my lap and a dryer sheet in front of me.
I
think she wants you
good.
To do the laundry.
Or maybe this is how you bathe the kid.
No, I think she's in the. I didn't know this, but I think she's in the middle of doing laundry right now as we speak.
Cowboys don't do laundry, right, fellas?
That's right. Pull me out of the ravine.
Women's work.
We were this close. If I don't know if that family hadn't shown up, we may have taken 2 giant branches and made one of those, hammocks and drug him down the hill. You're gonna be okay, Scooter. Don't worry, you know, Paul. I know where the gold is, Paul. Pay him no mind. He's crazy.
You know, giving each other bullet wounds just to drink whiskey.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, like we would do bits so out of the thing. Like one time, he got up. He lived up in Santa Clarita, and I was down near Beverly Hills, and he drove at like 4 in the morning to get to my house. But this is the bit. A bang on my door like at 6 in the morning. I get up, I run to the door like, what's happened? And he has, he's laying on my front stoop with a ripped up shirt and ripped up jeans, and he has claw marks all over him, and he goes, it was a full moon last night. I don't know what happened. I just woke up here. I was like, oh, come inside. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to tell anybody. You know, so we just go right into a scene about him being a werewolf. Like that's the bit.
Dedication.
Total dedication.
What did you do for the next hour?
No, then we laughed and put in, you know, Mario 64 and played it. That was our life. It's just like, how can we make each other laugh, you know, so hard? Yeah, he was a werewolf like at my doorstep. I don't know what happened. I have no memory except, you know, I've got my fingernails are, you know, broken off and I'm scratched up and a ripped up shirt and my jeans are torn.
And I feel like I've been eating steak all day.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Those are the bits we live
by. I taste of old woman.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Don't go to that website.
Speaking of which, isn't there something that you did where you scared an old lady too or something like
no,
that?
No, she came. We were playing Resident Evil. That was a.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. We played Resident Evil in the. I don't know if you ever played those survival horror games.
They were
so scary. And we did that, and an old lady came. It was like 2 in the morning, and we were really into the game. Mm. And a beat on my door. Oh. And we jump up and scream like women, and we go to the door. No offense. We go to the door.
Natalie's here. You guys.
No, I was talking to you guys.
Oh.
I appreciate it. Yeah. That is very sweet of
you. Go to the door, open the door, and there's like a 90-year-old woman trying to come in my house at 2 in the morning, and she's talking all this kind of like this.
Oh,
I go,
creepy.
Hello, how are you? Can I help you? And she said, the children. We're the children. And we don't know. It's really scary.
That's
and then
not okay.
Okay. She sits down. We had to call the cops, and she was like a wanderer from the nursing home, okay. and they had to come by. And this is
you gave her the name of Wanderer, and that sounds like the name of a bad guy in Resident Evil.
Yeah,
the Wanderer.
Yeah, but she came in, and we had just played in the game itself. We had just gotten a contact in the horror survival series of one of the the characters in the game is named Ida, and she or Ada is her name in the game. And this lady comes up, we say, "What's your name?" And she goes, "Ida." And my buddy Chris says, "Oh my God, Ida!" Like that. I go, "Shut up," you know, sitting her down and trying to get her calmed down. And we had to call the cops, and they came 3 a.m. And he's like, "Well, what were you guys doing?" We're like, "Playing PlayStation, trying to kill zombies." "You guys are 30, right?" "Yeah." "What's with the cowboy hats and the boots?" "Well,
we got an early morning.
We're also cowboys."
Yeah, we do a lot. We're kind of a multi-faceted guy. So.
That's unsettling.
Yeah, we actually, Chris and I met at Hershey Park. We worked at the...
Done a Nickelodeon show there.
Oh, yeah, so you totally get it, yeah.
That was the park where we were next door to their ski show. Like, we were doing a show, and then our backstage faced the ski show.
I forgot about that.
And I was watching, and they had one line where, you know, it's all lip syncs. The guy's on skis, and the guy gets out, and he's talking like this, man.
Yeah.
And he's so silly. And they ask him, like, "Where are you from?" And he goes, "California?"
Yeah.
And it gets this reaction from them. I'm like, well, New Jersey can make fun of us, but everybody else makes fun of New Jersey.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah.
California. I was mildly offended.
I'm sorry that I keep asking you, but I think it's also interesting is, if you don't mind telling your story about how you got out here. Like, how did you come to L.A.? How did this whole thing...
Car. Drove a car.
Okay.
Next.
I was wrong.
Right. Great stories, Justin. Yeah. Go back to the cowboy stuff. Yeah.
We did these in the wrong order.
We need to prep him. With the, we need to go over your talking points. Where we come here.
No, I was doing stand-up, and I've been doing stand-up for a while. And there was an audition. Actually, to make it very fast, I had done a stand-up show in Jacksonville, Florida, the Jacksonville Comedy Festival. And they said first prize was an audition at Caroline's in New York. And I actually, in the... what do you call New Faces or whatever, and I won that, and so I got to go to New York, and I bombed. I was horrible on that stage. Like, one of those shows you go, "Oh, I'm going to quit. I'm going to, you know, wonder if that guy still needs a librarian's assistant." You know, like, you're just going, you know how you, right when you walk off stage, well, there went that career choice. And then I thought, well, I can't go to New York because everyone's going to go, you know, you think when you're on stage that everybody in that crowd is going to tell everybody they know, "This guy's horrible." Yeah. And then New York's going to say, "Lock the gate. He can't come out." And
New
so
York,
I, yeah,
right.
The next year, I drove out to L.A., or I flew out just to see what it was like and to do a club here and there. And I did the Comedy Store, had a pretty good set, got to talk to an agent there, and she said, "Oh, we'll send you, come meet with us. You know, who are you?" That was really funny. And I said, "Oh, thanks." And she went and met with him the next day, and she said, "We have an audition for you if you want, because you do characters in your show." I said, "Sure." She says, "It's a sketch comedy show that Roseanne is putting on," which is the Roseanne Barr, for Fox. I said, "Okay." And I went on the audition, met the casting director, who was Marcia Shulman at the time, who's head of development at Fox, or comedy development at Fox, one of those head people over there. And at the time, she was just a casting director, and I auditioned for her. She said, "I think you're great. I want you to meet Roseanne." And I said, "Okay, when's that?" And this was in like January. She said, "We're going to do her, or maybe February. No, it was in January." She said, "In February, she's going to see all the people we wanted to see." I said, "Okay, well, I live in Alabama." I said, "So I have to come back." She goes, "Oh, really?" She goes, "Okay, well, can you come back?" I said, "Sure, I'll come back." And who? I didn't know you weren't supposed to fly for a callback. You know, And I went to LA. I said, "I got to meet Roseanne." And so I flew back out for a callback and auditioned in front of Roseanne, did the characters. I was kind of nervous, but she, during my audition, she was saying, like, "He's great. It's hilarious." Like, that kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, that's really weird to be with in this presence of this television icon.
Is this post-Roseanne, her sitcom?
Roseanne is still on the air.
Wow. Okay.
So this is a long time ago. And it's still on the air, and it's just winding down. They're about to win the lottery, if you will. She said, "Yeah, this guy's great." And I... at the end of my audition, there are other people waiting in the waiting room, like, to audition for one of the guys on the show, the guy they're looking for. And she just said, you're great. You got the job.
Oh, wow.
And I went, what do you mean? She said, you got to move to Hollywood in March. And I went, and there was a bunch of people in there. And then I saw like a stock market scramble. You know, people jumped up and started using the phone. It was really, really awkward. And I haven't been in an audition since like that. And I said, oh, okay. And I walked out, and the lady, I had a friend who, Melanie Lutz, who was acting manager in the LA side of things, because I was still signed in Birmingham with a comedy club guy, who's still like one of my dear friends. Great.
Right.
And so she said, I came out and I said, I got the job. And all these other actors are in the going over their sides, like, what did you just say? You
know?
And Marsha comes out and goes, she gave him the job. Like that. And all these, and Todd Glass was in the room, actually, which is funny. Really? And he was like, he still to this day remembers that. He goes, you jerk. You know, like that. He goes, what do you mean he's got the job? You're like, I'm working on my sides. And so I flew back home, did two more gigs, packed everything I owned in a Suburban, and drove across country. I thought, this is Hollywood. This is what you do. You come get a TV show.
Right.
And I went that next week to a table read, got fitted, got Taft-Hartley'd into the union, all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is easy. You know, and I did six episodes. We were canceled. Nothing. You know, after that, I'm like, when's the next show? You know, that kind of sort of thing. And so, I've just been kind of going about it since then. But it was fun. It was really weird.
That's
it was
awesome.
Really weird.
How much of a gap was that between then landing? I didn't realize until I heard you tell this again, because then after that, you went to Blue Collar TV.
Oh, that was a long time.
So there was a big gap in between.
Oh, yeah, but I like doing pilots.
Because I was just saying, like, how funny would it be that you get brought to Hollywood to be on Roseanne's show, and then you immediately jump from that. Like, maybe you do some pilots here or there. But then it's like, oh, now we want you to do this Blue Collar. Oh, okay, yeah, sure. This is like my thing.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. The Blue Collar TV, which was the last thing that I got fortunate enough to work with, the Jeff Foxworthy show, I think it was the first one, which I actually just got a residual check for, for 8 cents. Yeah. I kid you not. I was like,
there's a bar around here called Residuals. Do you know it?
No.
You can walk in there with that 8 cent check, give it to them, and they'll give you a free drink.
Oh,
that's
nice. If I only drink. You want it?
You can get a Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper. Your ID.
Yeah. So that week I actually went on another audition and got a job for a walk-on role, like a delivery guy on the Jeff Foxworthy show.
Right.
And
which I auditioned for.
Really?
Yeah.
You remember the first? Yeah. Oh, okay.
I was gonna say, what?
No, you remember? We went over the side. You helped me develop the character, and I went in, and we just recorded like three characters. This was many, many years ago.
Yeah. No, you were auditioning for Blue Collar TV. Jeff Foxworthy was his sitcom show.
So
you also auditioned for Blue Collar TV then.
I did.
This was the show that Haley Joel Osment and Jonathan Lipnicki were on. They were his kids. Yeah. And they were tiny. You know, And so I auditioned and got that. And then during that thing, Jeff just was so nice. And he said, you know, I thought about at one point trying to bring back Hee Haw. This is years ago. And I was like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I'll keep you in mind. And then flash forward 10 years, whatever goes by, even maybe longer. And the show comes out and I go, it's Foxworthy. This is the show.
Yeah.
It's that updated version of Hee Haw. And I said, if I don't get this job, I'm going to go back and do the librarian job.
Right.
And that's
go back to Birmingham.
That's you still have Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I have Hershey and the juggling clown
guy. Yeah. That's great.
That's true. That's how that happened. So
it was, and so like, and,
yeah, well, it was real funny when I came in. And Jeff, I'd gotten the job, and Jeff saw everybody on tape, so he knew, oh, that's that guy. I remember Heath. And I came in, and he was like, it was just a great feeling that years later. He goes, Heath Hodge, man, I wondered if you were going to be around for this. And, you know, after that time, and he's a really good guy. All those guys were really great.
And that's the thing. I just talked to the club owner, or not owner, I'm sorry, the manager at that River Center Comedy Club, and he was talking about Bill Engvall and how he goes, he said, it's funny because I can't remember how we got talking. I got talking about you or something like that, and then I said somehow he brought up Bill Engvall. Anyway, he goes, it's funny because he goes, every once in a while we book big names, and he goes, when we booked Bill, this was a while ago, but they said he was still huge. You know what I mean? So he came in and he goes, when you're the manager, he goes, I know that I can't, if we run out of hamburgers in the kitchen, everything is going to be okay. But if the headliner or something goes wrong with any one of the comedians, then I got to do a mad dash to fix something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because that's what people are coming to see. They're not coming to eat a hamburger.
Right.
He goes, or necessarily coming to have one of our Bahama Mamas, you know what I mean? Yeah. They're coming to see the show.
Except in San Antonio, where you were in the condo, right?
Yeah.
They have a great taco bar.
And a haunted house. It's also the hotel.
Yeah. I got to tell you that story, too. So anyway, well, I'll tell that story real quick, is that evidently there was a guy who came up to me after the show, and there is a railroad crossing in San Antonio where evidently a bus of kids was hit and killed by a train.
Awesome.
And this guy, this guy was probably in his late 40s, and he's traveling with this chick who's probably 28 at the oldest.
Yeah.
And looking good. I mean, she's beautiful. She's not smoking hot, you know what yeah. I mean, necessarily. She's not like an LA 10 or anything like that, but she's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. She's very beautiful for, and this guy is no looker, so I'm like, this guy's got to have dough or something, because they're going on like some 3-week vacation all over the Southwest.
What does this have to do with that bus full of kids?
I'm getting to it. Is that,
this is the creepiest story you've ever told.
It's going to get creepier. So this guy says that one of the things he likes to do is go around to these ghost story things, right?
Right.
And then, so he goes, she didn't believe me, but you go and you put your car.
You told me this. Go ahead.
You go and you put your car on the top of this railroad, right? And you put it in neutral, and that the kids will come, and the ghosts of the kids will come and push your car over the hump. Like, so he goes, I went with her, and you get your wheels where it's like, there's no, like, I didn't have my foot on the brake. You get it where you're sitting there, and you'll sit there for about a minute, and then just out of nowhere, all of a sudden, your car will just move over the railroad tracks, and this chick.
Demon
and,
possession.
So the reason I brought up the whole thing with the chick is that I'm like, if you're like this age, and you got a hot chick with you, like I was just trying to figure out what's the dynamic, and because she was kind of freaked out and everything, but I'm like, to me, it's like he needs to be taking her to like Paris or something. You know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah,
like that's the vibe. Not taking her to where kids or ghost kids are going to push us over a railroad track in San Antonio.
Check it out, baby.
And then we're going to go back and bang.
Wasn't that hot?
Yeah.
Didn't we just do a whole segment on Star Wars action figures on this?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but nobody's really dating. Yeah. None of us is really dating somebody 30 years our
right.
junior. You
right,
know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
Wow. As far as I know.
No. No, not me. No.
It's got awkward.
So anyway, so he says Bill Engvall came through here, and I was kind of nervous because he's a big star. You know, he's coming into the club. He says, I'm sitting there. We're seating people. People are kind of coming in. There's a hubbub around and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, this guy walks up to me and says, when do you want me here, and how much time do you want me to do? Mm. And I turn around, and it's Bill Engvall. just him. Like, no person, no handler, manager, no PR person. Just Bill Engvall in a shirt and a hat and a pair of jeans, and he walks up
and shirt.
Yeah, a shirt. And he walks up and says, when do you want me here, and how much time do you want me to do? And he goes, the show's at 8:30, so, I mean, if you were here at, I don't know, 8:30 showtime, that'd be great. And, I don't know, 45, 50, you want a 15-minute light? He's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then he leaves, and then 8:30, he comes walking in the door. Hangs out, goes to the green room, never asks for anything, no green M&M, nothing like that, does his time and kills, destroys, hangs out with people afterwards, taking pictures with them, signing autographs, and just completely low maintenance and just happy to be doing what he's doing, you know what I mean? It's like, I wouldn't give to have that.
They're great guys. They are all great guys.
Like he told me when I first met him at that, we're going back, I don't even know if we finished that story, but we're going back to Pepper Bellies, he said, he was talking to me about
Pepper Bellies. Get yourself a nice Dalmatian. Over at Pepper Bellies.
He was talking about working with them, and he said, if you honestly see them walking on the street, you can go up to them and say, hey, I'm a comic. I'm a huge fan of yours.
Yeah.
And he says, if they have time, they will say, hey, you want to walk with me? And they'll just talk and tell you stories and want to hear you stories and stuff like that. Like, and it's, I know it sounds really super cheesy and everything, but for me in particular, because the only real comedic influences I had as a kid was Bill Cosby and kind of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would watch Robin Williams at the Met and Bill Cosby's himself again and again and again. But then as I got older and was more aware of like a sense of humor and everything like that, that's when Jeff Foxworthy, You Might Be a Redneck If comes out, and everything. And it was weird because I was working at Hollywood Video when the Blue Collar Comedy Tour came out. I just didn't understand why we only had two copies of this movie and every eighth person was walking in going, do you guys have the Blue Collar Comedy Tour?
Right.
And then one day I watched it and laughed my ass off.
Right.
Like,
it's
hysterical. And you're like, no wonder. Like, now I get it. Now I know why they're losing their freaking minds over this. So to hear that these guys are that cool, like it's like to me it's the same as like growing up in New York and running into Joe DiMaggio at a deli. You know what I mean? Like that same kind of vibe. Nice. Just I've never ran into any of them other than Ron when we met him at Talladega that one time. But and even that, like it was weird for me because I was afraid I was going to make a total ass out of myself. So I stayed, like, Heath saw him and walked over, and me and Bill stayed like 20 feet away. Like, we're just like, well, we'll let him go do his thing and everything. Yeah. And he goes, do you, Bill asked me, because he thinks because I'm a stand up, I automatically know Ron White. And I say, no, I don't know him. I mean, I know of him. I'm a huge fan. Like, he's great. Yeah. He's amazing and everything. And then when Heath was talking to him, he's like, and he sees us over there, he's like, hey, why don't you guys come?
Yeah, it was one of those moments. I'm talking, I'm just with my friends, and I turn around and they're over there standing by a tire machine. You know, like, get over here. You know, like that.
Yeah. And I said to Bill, oh my God, we're going over there. Like I was 16 and meeting NSYNC or something.
That's awesome. How are we doing on the L time?
We are good. We are locked and loaded. Hour done.
All right. Wow. Yeah. Any dates you have to plug, sir?
No. I'm doing nothing. That's awkward. Just gonna, I don't have any rodeos.
Heath, if you're a huge fan of what you heard on the podcast, what you could do is you could book yourself on a Disney cruise.
Well, certainly you're on. Come on, there's got to be a DVD out there somebody can buy.
No, but I don't have a DVD. I need to do that. Yeah. I get that asked all the time.
I'm surprised.
Just someone go be my Facebook friend. That's
what. Oh, okay, great.
Just be friends on Facebook.
What's your Facebook handle?
Kevin Improv.
Wait a second.
It's Heath like the candy bar. H-E-A-T-H.
And then, or the dead Joker. That's my new one.
Oh. What? Oh.
No.
Too soon?
Too long.
A bit. So it's Heath Heich, H-Y-C-H-E. And you can go be a friend. And
are you a friend or a fan? Do you have a page?
I have both.
Great.
So, and I accept everybody.
Do you?
Except
black, white.
Yeah, everything.
Asian.
I believe.
Malaysian.
Yeah, everything. Well, I'm on a cruise ship, so yes, everything goes. I'm sure I'll have Filipino cabin cleaners next week on my page. No offense to any Filipino cabin cleaners out there.
Well, that's most of our listeners, so I'm glad you referenced that.
And this is the song that when I first put these together, I know it's kind of cheesy now, but I was like, oh, I'll put this on when Heath comes on, and I have not used this until today.
Nice. Alabama.
Yes, there it is.
Been a year. All right.
Heath Heich, everybody. Thank
Heath
you
Heich.
Very much.
Woo! Thank you, guys. Didn't hurt at all.
Yeah. Yes. On behalf of Heath Heich, my friend Kevin Miller, this is Justin Worsham saying,
oh, my.